This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.
David Morgan with you with the weekly perspective for the week ending 11 May 2018. Well, first article up is from Malden Economics. The global economy is not recovering. Just look at the data. As always, I read this whole thing and I'm going to try to point out the highlights. This is an article from the Economic Cycles Research Institute. And basically the first graph up here on the screen, if you're listening to the podcast, you can just imagine a downward slope from left to right. It shows growth rate expansion in percentage terms. And if you look at from 75 to 80, you're at low, roughly 5%. And then if you look at from 2001 to 2007, we're just over 2%. So we are, in fact, not really doing that well during the longest recovery or one of the longest recoveries in recorded history for the United States. So kind of sad, but this is the reality. There's another chart here that talks about the growth rate, and it shows, of course, subpar. It does show the dropout in the 2008 financial crisis. Then another one that's very interesting is international gross domestic product growth is rolling over. In other words, all three, the United States, Eurozone, and Japan, are all failing as I speak, meaning that their GDP growth is becoming less and less. And the debt gap means higher interest rates, as we all know. They have been happening. And I think the most biggest takeaway from this article, for me at least, was the fact that foreign official central bank holdings of U.S. Treasuries has not increased in 5 years. In fact, the article says, and it's a bit of a misnomer, but it makes the point that foreigners haven't been buying U.S. Treasury for the last 5 years. That's really not true. What is true is that they haven't increased their purchases beyond the level that was 5 years ago. So the question, of course, is who is buying? And the answer, of course, is the Fed is rebuying some of their debt and, you know, monetizing it. You have, China, pension funds, but it's a very precarious situation. So the Fed and Treasury have filled the gap with the sort of contrivances such as forcing banks and money market funds to buy more treasuries. These have run their course and there are no replacement tools. Obviously, this leaves one option: higher interest rates. People will loan their money to the government if it gives them enough incentive, and higher yields will do it. We'll see. How much higher? We don't know, but it won't take much to further reduce bank lending activity, which will reduce M2 and push the economy closer to recession. Watch out. By now, everybody knows we are in the slowest recovery on record. So they'll end there. Next article up is from Financial Sense, Jim Poplava. Very fond of Jim for a variety of reasons. Those that follow my work for a long time would know why. And this is just a quick summation of an interview that Jim did, or I should say Financial Sense did, with Martin Armstrong. And the title is "Global Pensions Are the Next Major Crisis," says Martin Armstrong. And let me add several others as well. Pension fund in the crosshairs. The Federal Reserve and other central banks lowered rates to such dramatic levels after 2008 that we ended up the lowest levels in 5,000 years. Since then, the Fed now realizes it needs to normalize, not because the economy is heating up, Armstrong said, but for a very simple reason. Pension funds are going to go bust. That's the next crisis, he said. You can see it coming. It's like a train coming down the tracks. Pension funds generally need 7 to 8% returns to break even. And buying 10-year bonds at 3% means they're locking in guaranteed losses. Going forward, these losses will continue to grow and eventually lead to some form of bailout. I'm not going to belabor it. I think a lot of us know this. He talks about CalPERS and some of the other pension funds, and the whole interview is available if you subscribe at financialsense.com. And I would certainly recommend that if you're involved in these markets, that would probably be a well use of your time and money. And so I will move on. I'll talk about one more article before I move into the metals. This is from Capitalist Exploits, a site I don't go to often. It's a very good article. The USD, the US dollar, a collapsing star, .. and a journey to hell. The article starts off naming that the dollar is still the reserve currency of the world. 64% of central banks' foreign reserves are made by the U.S. dollar. More than a third of the world's GDP comes from countries with their currencies pegged to the dollar. Over 85% of global foreign exchange trade involves the U.S. dollar. 39% of the world's debt is denominated to the dollar. And then the article goes through the bearish arguments, and I won't name them all, and then the bullish arguments. And then, of course, talks about dollar repatriation coming from like overseas or the Caymans or wherever some of the dollars were held offshore. And then the short positions, that have been in the dollar for a very, very long time. And I just want to get to the bottom line on all these, this article, because I really think that it is very interesting. The summation surmises everything that he wrote about. So first of all, he has a statement here that contagion starts with the weakest links in the chain, just like pulling a loose thread on a sweater, and soon the whole thing unravels. But better said, under that, when the point-and-shoot crowd realizes they're overweight emerging markets and emerging market currencies, the selling will be indiscriminate, which will set off the algos, or the algorithms, programmed to sell anything exhibiting volatility beyond some predetermined metric. And as those circuit breakers trigger, there won't be enough dollars to meet the demand. It feels right now like we have a perfect setup for what nobody expects, a much, much higher dollar. So very interesting title. The conclusion at the bottom is different than the title. He makes a very solid argument here about what I just read, basically the emerging markets, and what that would mean for the dollar. And right now, the dollar has been showing a great deal of weakness over the last year or so. And I have a chart in front of me, but it's been weak. But yet, it has been bouncing here, and of course, gold has been falling off. So I'll leave it at that. Again, this is Capitalist Exploits. I recommend you look the article for yourself. So I want to conclude with the precious metals, and this comes from my, I'll call him good friend, certainly a friend, and that's Franklin Sanders, the money changer, and he puts out some market commentary more often than I. And this one I think is important because very few people I think are aware of this, but he's Southern, and he writes as a Southerner. You all need to know, so you need to know about a referendum in Switzerland. According to the Swiss National Bank, the sovereign money initiative to be voted on in June aims at a fundamental reform of the Swiss monetary system. In a nutshell, the initiative asks that the creation of money and the granting of loans be separated by barring commercial banks from creating deposits through lending. According to the initiative's promoters, the Swiss National Bank should be the sole organization authorized to create money, not only cash and coins, but also the electronic money in our bank accounts. What does this mean? The fatal venom in the present worldwide monetary system is that banks can legally create money, actually credit, through fractional reserve banking. That is, they keep only a fraction of deposits on reserve and loan out the rest. Well, and then some. Because the effective reserve requirement for the entire system is something less than 2% of deposit liabilities. That means for $100 deposited, banks as a whole can create $5,000 in loans. And really, the 2% reserve doesn't place any practical limitation on banks. That's how they blow each other up and blow such huge bubbles so quickly. So through the magic fractional reserve banking, you get to borrow credit from a bank they create out of thin air, and the Swiss government forces all of us to take it. What would this referendum do? To make loans, Swiss banks would have to borrow reserves from the Swiss National Bank, which would create credit or money loaning to the banks. They claim this would give Switzerland a 100% reserve banking system, but that's really not accurate. It would merely take the power to create credit out of thin air away from the banks and vest it in the Swiss central bank alone. Not perfect, but at least a beginning of pulling the bank's fangs out of our necks. Whoops, did I forget to tell you that the Swiss central government, the parliament, and the SNB oppose the sovereign money initiative? Oh, how surprised are we about that? So I'll leave it there. And I'll be back with you next week.
This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.